All right, thank you. I'd like to thank the organizers to invite me to this workshop. And I'd like to present some of my work. And the title is Beyond Boundaries Within a Few Superpowers. And I'm going to present two attempts to get beyond these two algorithms, somehow get combined algorithms, somehow handle new classes of algebras that haven't been done before for CSP. All right, so, and this is not very, very recent. Both of them were done at least maybe one and a half years ago. And they are on my website. They haven't been published because very incomplete. All right, so let's review what we are trying to get beyond. And I'm going to review two very powerful algorithms, the bounded width algorithm and few subpowers algorithm, just very quickly. And unfortunately, I'm putting up the definition of CSP because I need a different flavor, which is like multi-sorted CSP. So I'm considering a bunch of algebras. I have a template for me is just a finite set of idempotent algebras. And for practical purposes, I'm just going to assume that this class or this set is closed under taking subalgebras. Okay? And an instance is just a bunch of potatoes. Each of the potatoes is one of these. And I have binary relations between these potatoes. Okay? I don't care what the binary relations are. I just know that there are some relations between the ith and jth potato. I have a relation which is a sub algebra of B sub I cross B sub J. All right. I assume that if I look at the binary relation which connects a potato with itself, then it's essentially an identity relation. And because my relations are ordered, I assume that the inverse of any one relation is the opposite in the other direction. So this is very, very standard stuff, except that I have multi-sorted CSP, and the solution is a map, which is actually a choice function. It picks from the ith potato an element such that for each relation, Rij, Fi, and Fj is in this relation. Pretty standard. All right, so local consistency. I'm saying that an instance, which I just described, a bunch of potato relations, is 1-2 consistent if these relations Rij are subdirect subalgebras of the product B sub I and B sub j. And if 2-3 consistent, if Rik is a subset, actually a subuniverse of Rij circle Ijk, and circle is just the usual composition of two binary relations. So this is a very nice way to express, in a sense, 2-3 consistency. And the local consistency algorithm is saying that if you have an instance A, then you can turn this instance into a 2-3 consistent instance A prime, such that the two instances have the same set of solutions. And the proof is very simple. You just reduce the instance. You just get smaller and smaller relations and possibly smaller and smaller subuniverses until it becomes consistent. And getting something smaller is just calculating a new relation for the ik, a new relation between the ith and k potato is going to be the intersection of the old relation intersect with the composition of Rij and Rjk. So this is the local consistency algorithm. Bounded width theorem of Liebobartram and Marchik-Kozik says that if B, the algebras in B, generate a congruent with semi distributive variety, then every non empty 2-3 consistent instance has a solution. Okay, and the proof is, I mean, once you know, it's still not easy, but it really helps. Well, the idea is that somehow, by magic, you have to find a solution. you are given consistency, and somehow you have to find a solution. You cannot run an algorithm somehow to find it. You just by magic have to, the solution has to exist. And if each of the potatoes is one element, then this is a solution, because of subject, because of the relation of subject. And if the instance is non-empty, so none of the potatoes are the empty set, and non-trivial, so it's not the previous case, then you have to find a smaller instance with some consistency property. Okay. Now there are two important points. First, this was very surprising for me that we have to use a new consistency property, something between 1-2 consistency and 2-3 consistency, called the Prax strategy, and we need absorption theory to get the smaller instance. But the proof is not, and the proof is important because somehow we are getting smaller and smaller and smaller in an instance, and finally we get the trivial instance, and suddenly there is a solution. And we lose 2-3 consistency on the way. And this theorem essentially is pushed to its limit. We know that you have bounded this for an algebra if and only if the algebra of congruence meets the semi-distributive variety. So this is somehow the limit of this local consistency algorithm and this approach. The other very powerful theorem is the few subpowers or few subpowers algorithm and theorem. And I'm not going to use edge terms or anything. I'm just putting up the definition so people know what I'm talking about. I say that algebra has few subpowers if you look at the set of all subalgebras of P to the N, and then there are only exponential many of those, where exponent is some polynomial or the size of N, of E N. And this is a very nice theorem of six authors. It says that B has few subpowers if and only if it has an edge term. And I wrote down the edge term because I think this is the easiest. To see somehow the first two equations, and if you look at first three variables, then first equation gives you Morozov, and the last, I don't know, n minus one, or I don't know how many equations, and the last, except for the first three, and except for the first three variables, and except for the first two equations, you have nu. So you have nu here somehow, and you have Morozov here. All right, so the Eschterm algorithm. It's a different approach. A compact representation of a subuniverse S in a product of a bunch of algebras which each of has an edge term is going to be just a subset, a small subset, bounded by some polynomial in the size of the number of variables that generates S. So it's just a small generating set. Plus, there's some condition. Somehow, every minor fork or small projection is captured in this small generating set. I'm not going to define what these are. Essentially, saying that if some configuration happens in S, then the same The same configuration can be is present in P. All right, so the theorem is if the variety generated by B has an edge term, then the compact representation of the solution set can be computed in polynomial time. In particular, you can decide whether that's empty or not. Okay, so somehow this is completely different. Yeah, we are not coming from above and then getting down to a solution and losing solutions on the way. We are somehow can calculate all the solutions, and in the process, we maintain a full description of all the solutions. And the proof over you is the following. Well, it's an iterative approach. If you take a compact, first of all, you take a compact representation of the full product that exists, easy to describe. And then, once you have a compact representation, then you can add one more constraint relation. If I want to add Rij, then the solution set S prime is going to be all functions from the previous set, such that this respect these RRJ relations. And the nice thing is that once you know the compact representation S, and you know this relation RRJ, then you can compute the compact representation of this intersection. And you proceed. And in finite many steps, you applied all the constraints, and you have the description of the set of solutions. All right, so there are these two completely different algorithms in my mind. And obviously, if you want an algorithm, then somehow you have to combine them or have to invent some algorithm which can handle both. And I'm going to talk about two approaches to combine these two algorithms or get beyond these algorithms. And the first one is massive on top. That's a title I gave to a paper. It shouldn't be called like that, but what the heck. So here's the theorem. It doesn't say too much, but suppose that you have a template, which is just a bunch of finite algebras, idempotent algebras, and each of them has a congruence beta such that the quotient has few subpowers, and each congruence block, which is a subalgebra because it's idempotent algebra, each congruence block has bounded width, so generates a congruence modular variety. So suppose that we have such a template. Then we can solve the constant satisfaction problem over this template for any instance in polynomial time. In a sense, this is some combination. It's very I call this massive on top first of all because I did it for massive first, instead of saying that the quotient b over beta, instead of saying it has few suppers, I could have said that it has massive operation. It's easier to describe, but it's slightly easier to prove. So that's why it's called a massive on top. And somehow we can separate, we have the separating congruence. And the proof over you, the following, well, I take some instance, and which is a bunch of potatoes. And for people, a constraint means that if you pick two coordinates, I and J, then a constraint tells you how the solution should look like on these two coordinates. Okay, if you project the solution to these two coordinates, then it has to be either this or that or this, blah, blah, blah. The important point about the constraint is that it has a finite small description. But I can invent any other kind of constraint which says something about the solutions. If the description is somehow finite and says something about the solution. So I'm going to invent an extended kind of constraint which is going to tell you exactly what's going to happen on these two coordinates, but in every other coordinate is going to tell you what happens modulo beta. And remember, modulo beta, each of the potatoes are massive, not massive, egg, I mean a few subpowers. So whatever the relation modulo beta of the solution set can have, I mean, that's like a finite description. It has few subpowers. So this guy, pi I or v b sub I, which is a potatoes, I factor it by beta I. This is like I have some congruence on each of the potatoes. And each of these guys, the quotients have few subpowers. So I can say that every solution has to be in some relation, which is the subuniverse of this product, or pool product. And this is a finite description. So this is somehow, okay, so it's just a combination of an infinite constraint and a finite constraint on two coordinates. And you have to mimic the whole thing. You have to use extended consistency algorithm. If you think about these constraints, that they say something about solutions, then there's obvious consistency. What happens if I and J and J and K happens, and then what about I and K? What does it say? How can you, if you know this kind of constraints for I and J and J and K, what can you say about I and K? That's two-three consistency. And using these, I will be able to obtain a solution module of the beta congruence. So I will be able to pick one beta block in each of the potatoes somehow at the end, such that if you restrict the original problem to these beta classes, then that restriction is going to be two straight consistent. And since each of the beta classes have few subpowers, then two straight consistent implies a solution. So that's the outline of this algorithm. Now let's try to make it a little bit more precise. Before I proceed, let's have some observations about edge terms and the relational structures about edge terms. I don't think this is written down, but I think it's very nice and a nice observation. It's not difficult at all. All right, if you remember the few subpowers algorithm, then we applied a binary relation, or we applied the constraint relation to a subuniverse described by a compact representation. But you can do that if you have two subproducts or subuniverses, S and P, and you know the compact representation of each of them, then you can compute the compact representation of the intersection. And also, if you know the compact representation of S and P, then you can get the compact representation of S cross P. This is not very difficult. The second part is I do it using a trick. Essentially, what I'm doing is that, all right, so it's for simplicity, I have S and P are some subuniverses of an algebra B, subpowers of an algebra B, and B has edge term. Well, I can get the compact representation, and I know the compact representation of S and P. I can get the compact representation of S cross P. That's straightforward from the definition. And afterwards, I apply equality constraints going from these are, and there are n variables here, and I apply equality constraints for the first variable here and the first one here, and so on. And eventually, what I'm going to write, plus equality constraints, is going to be a set of all tuples, A bar, such that A bar is in S intersect P. And then from this, you can recover, you just take the first n quadrants and you get the intersection. Okay, so in a sense, the algorithm which Adamo invented and used many variable constraints and everything, it's enough to use equality constraints, apply equality constraints, and then using this you can get intersection. The second observation is that if you are given a compact representation of subuniverses S1 to SK over the same power, and assume that the union is a subuniverse, then the compact representation of S, the union, can be computed in plano time. This is not difficult either. I mean, the same, whatever is written down, you do it, and that's it. As a corollary, if you know the compact representation of a bunch of small or large relations, then if you write down any relation, any new relation using a primitive positive formula, then the compact representation of that can be computed in polynomial time. No. Yes, this. Right here. Okay. All right, so I think this is much easier to think about it, that you somehow in the clone, in the relational clone, you can work. You can easily work. An open problem for me, and I have listed that at the end, some slides on this here. If you look at this second lemma, and if you remove the assumption that the union of these SBIs is a subuniverse, can you compute the compact representation of the subuniverse generated by the union? I don't know. If you could, then you are somehow completely mimicked what you can do with linear algebra. All right, so extended constraints. Now, so we have some tools now. So let's see what the extended constraints. Well, I define an extended instance. An extended instance is a bunch of potatoes and constraints, extended constraints. And each of the extended constraints is composed with some part which says what's happening on the I and J coordinate, and composed with some other part which tells you what happens modulo beta. And the two parts are somehow linked. If SY and U bar is in this constraint, then the beta class of X is the same as U sub I, and the beta class of Y is the same as U sub J. So somehow they describe this very nicely. And I have two more conditions which mimic the same thing what happens in the binary, in the original definition what I wrote down. Essentially, this says that if I n equals J, then these guys have to, I have the equality relation on S sub II. And S sub I J inverse is the same as SJI. In a sense, it's very straightforward. And what do I mean that this is a constraint? It says that, well, a map is a solution if and only if each of these extended constraints are satisfied, meaning that for each ij, FIFJ is in. FIFJ tells me what happens on the I and J coordinate, and this tells me a tuple of V tuple modulo beta, and this guy has to be in this constraint. And just write down extended consistency algorithm. I mean, what could it be? And I say that SIK is a two-sided consistence if SIK is a subuniversal SIJ circle SJK. Now this is how you define it. It's a very natural description. So meaning that if I have a solution, if XZ U bar, if X you can have many different number of classes. So here's I, J, K. And what does it mean? If you have X, Z, U bar, so here's X, here's Z, and U bar is this. Okay? U bar is a selection of classes. All right, how can this happen? How can this happen that a solution somehow satisfies this constraint? It means that I have going to have some solution which goes through these guys. What does it mean? That I'm going to have some y here such that x, y, and the same u bar is in Sij, and y, z with the same u bar is in Sjk. So that, I mean, if that doesn't happen, then obviously I cannot have such a solution. So this is consistency. All right, so every instance can be turned into a 2-3 consistent extended instance without losing solutions. Right? So if you think about this, in this process, I never lost a solution. If something was a solution in this process, I keep it. And the way you do it, the same thing. You start with your relations, Rij relations, and the full product modulo beta. With obvious restrictions, what I have to have that the beta class of X is U sub I, and y, the beta class of Y is U sub J. And you run the 2-3 consistent algorithm, the same thing, intersection, composition. And now you have to take it going back here and verify that this is, it's not a primitive positive formula, but you can use intersections, extensions, and projections, and the second lemma that you can verify that this, after you compute this and intersect it with another one, you can compute this in terminal time, in each step. So you run this, and you have to verify that this stops in terminal time. First of all, I didn't describe, I mean, how do I really think of this? Well, you can think of this S sub I, that X sub I j, that for each X and Y, I list all those beta strands which somehow go through these. And that's a compact representation. For each choice of X and Y, I have a compact representation. So I have S sub I has a compact representation because for each X, Y, I can describe all those U bars which are in this X, which stand with this X, Y. This is a subuniverse. These have a compact representation. So I have a bunch of compact representations that represents S sub I, J. And the algorithm stops in point in time because the number of witness indices are decreasing. Somehow. And you also have to verify that if you have two, three consistent extended instances, non-empty, that you have a solution. You can easily see that if S sub I two-three consistent, then if I take, just look at all those U's bars such that there exists X, Y, such that X, Y, U bar is in S sub I, J. Let's call this set. So these are the modulo beta stuff. I forget what happens on the I and J coordinate. Let's call this S little ij. And you can easily show that f little ij is the same as f little kl for any ij kl. So all of these guys have modulo beta the same thing after 2-3 consistency, because I just look at the definitions. And if this non-empty, so we just pick any u bar here, and because of the 2-3 consistency again, that means that I have a strand, and I have two elements, and I can always extend it in any way I like. So I get a 2-3 consistent instance inside these beta classes. All right, so that's the idea. All right, some considerations. I said that each algebra in the template has a congruence such that the quotient is has few subpowers and each of the blocks as they meet. You can each of them is described by some terms, existence of terms, and you can have uniform terms for all of these. So I think the edge term is non-trivial, I think. I don't know Ralph what you have in mind, what proof you had. If you have two you have to know the proof. You have to apply the proof. It's not, I think, not syntactic. You have two algebras with edge term, and terms can be different. Then, if you have two finite algebras with edge term, and the terms are different, and then you find a term which works for both. Yeah, so. All right. Maybe someone knows the proof, but I know. All right, so as a corollary, if you take a variety joined by finite algebra, each of which has ID boundaries of few subpowers, and find many of these guys, then for each template sitting inside this variety, the constant satisfaction problem is solved in point time. Because such template has these congruences, what I so it's problem two problems I just told the first one. And the second problem, I just put it up here. I started to think about this at midnight. So, I mean, what do we want on the quotients? What do we want? What on the quotients we want somehow a compact representation of all solutions. Essentially, I want to take intersections and maybe union or something like that. It's not entirely clear what you can do if you just assume that the quotients have bounded weights instead of edge term, it's a few subpowers. You won't be able to describe full solutions, but still, this thing gives you some information. So somehow, you can, on the top part, maybe you have some nice structure. Anyway, so I just put it up here. All right, so the second part, I have time, good. Consistent maps. The paper is Trevor Mosev. All right, so completely different approach. Forget whatever I said, except for the definition of CSP and the two algorithms. So we are not dealing about quotients on congresses or anything like that. So I take an instance, the same as before. So I have a bunch of potatoes and binary relations between these potatoes. And I just take arbitrary maps on each of the potatoes. And I say that this collection of maps is consistent if any two pair preserves the relations between those two potatoes. Okay? And I press it again that the maps can be arbitrary. So they need not even to be polynomials, anything. It's clear that if for each potato you take the identity map, then this is consistent. Because if you take an edge, you apply identity both, then you get an edge. All right. So that's out of the way. If you have a solution, then the mapping every point of the potato to the selected element, the solution, it's a constant map, that's also consistent. Because if you have an edge, then the solution has to have an edge. Another easy observation that consistent maps map solutions to solutions. If you have a consistent map, I mean arbitrary, and you take a solution, because edges are mapped to edges, well, this maps solutions to solutions. So very nice. And if you have two consistent set of maps, then you can compose them pointwise. So you apply the first in this one potato and the second on the same potato, and since each of them preserves edges, the composition preserves edges. In particular, you can iterate a consistent set of maps. All right, so what can you do with them? I say that a set of consistent maps is idempotent if each of the maps on each of the potatoes is an idempotent map. Okay, so it's a retraction. just idempotent inner operation. And I say that it's permutational if each of the piece of I's is a permutation. Okay. All right, so first interesting lemma. If P is a non-permutational consistent set of maps, for an instance, then I can construct a smaller instance, a prime, in polynomial time, such that A has a solution if and only if A prime does. It's not that hard. You take a consistent set of maps. You can iterate it. So this consistent set of maps are going to be idempotent. Okay? Is it clear? So what do I mean? Let me write it down. So. All right, so I have a bunch of potatoes, and I have P1 on the first potato, P2 on the second, P3, and third, and so on. And iteration is just going to be, let's call this Qi of x is going to be just Pi of x to some big power. Let's say some big number factorial, okay? All right, big number is bigger than any of the universe, any of the potatoes, where n is bigger than this I max. And that guarantees you that these guys are idempotent, and because the origin number they're consistent, then this Q set of Qs are also consistent and idempotent. And since P was non-permutational, there is at least one potato where P was not a permutation, its iteration is not permutation. So this is actually selecting some subset in each potato, and Q maps the potato into this subset. All right, so I say that the second one, take idempotent images of universal relations. So my new constraint, my new instance, A prime, is going to be what? It's going to be PI of A sub I, of B sub I, sorry. So my original Q, thank you. QI and QI cross QJ of RIJ. Yes, it is. Okay, so this is the same as RIJ restricted to QIBI cross QJBJ. Because we are acting coordinate-wise and edges are preserved. So whatever I take an edge, then the image is going to be an edge inside this, so I cannot get anything new. And whatever I had there, because it was a Q's idempotent, it stays there. So this is clear. Now I have a new instance. It's smaller, definitely smaller, but I have something. What is this guy? I took an arbitrary, Q is some map. It's not a term operation. B is an idempotent algebra. All unit operations are the identity. So Q is just any map. So I have a new algebra. So we step outside the variety. We use an idempotent image of an algebra. But we don't have to care too much because the interesting multiple conditions are linear, and linear multiple conditions are preserved by this construction. So I have to assume that my set of, my template is closed on not only subuniverses, but also applying an arbitrary idempotent operation. Alright, so, yeah, I think that's clear. How do I find consistent maps? So I know what I like to do. The plan is that I have an instance. Somehow I find a consistent set of maps. There's always one, the identity, so I'd like to have something different, which is non-permutational. Be using this, I will get a smaller instance and then repeat. And I get a polynomial algorithm, somehow I get a solution. Okay, so that's the idea. So I just have to find a set of consistent maps. And the first observation, the first interesting lemma, is that you can describe consistent maps by an instance of a CSP, and this instance is going to be much larger. How do I describe it? Well, I'm looking for P. I'm looking for P. Not as easy. All right, so here's my potatoes, right? I like to find the constant set of maps P1 to PN for these. Well, P1, for each potato, I'm going to have many copies of that potato. So I have B1 here. And I take B1, many copies of B1. And I'm going to, an element is going to be picked here, which is, I just can't say that it's P1 of A, where A is some element of B1. Let's say that B1 is A1 AK, so I have K copies of B1, so this is going to P1 of A1, P1 of A2, and so on, P1 of AK. Okay, so idea is that I'm going to have a constraint instance, many more potatoes than I had. And the solution is going to be picking one point from each of the potatoes, and the point I pick here is going to tell me what's going to be the image of P1 at A1. And so on. And I just have to just add relations which is going to describe. Well, if I have a relation, okay, let's make B2 is going to be B1 to BL. So this is P2 of B1, P2 of B2, and so on, P2 of BL. So if there's an edge A1, B2 is in the relation R1, 2, well, I know that my set of consistent maps have to map this edge to an edge. So what does it mean? That I just add a copy of R1, R2 between these two potatoes. If I have a solution, then it's going to be, I add all these guys there. If I have a solution, then I'm going to pick one element from each of them such that if A1 is connected to B2, then P1, A1 and P1, P2, B2 is going to be related. That just says it's a consistent map. So a set of consistent maps can be easily described by a newer instance. Hopefully, these potatoes are going to be smaller. So that's what I'm rooting for. I hope that these potatoes are going to be smaller. They are going to be many, more. I don't care. But I hope that these potatoes are going to be smaller. All right, so that's one way to find a set of consistent maps. Just look at an instance of a new instance of CSP and find a solution there. Another way is to take any term T and take any solution F and plug in this F solution into the second coordinate of this binary term and use X in the first solution. Well, just think about it. This binary term preserves edges. If both of them are edge, then the result is edge. All right? So because F is a solution, and if have X and Y is, or just X1 and X2 is an edge, then this gives you an edge there. So this is going to be a consistent set of maps. Okay? So we see that, I hope. In fact, you can look at all consistent set of maps, and this is an algebra. This is it has the same operations as the original. It's in the same variety as in the as your potatoes. You just apply the terms pointwise, and it's going to be consistent set of maps. So this is just nothing but applying the term T to the identity consistent set of maps and that solution, which is a consistent set of maps. All right, so we have to combine these two somehow. These finite T consistent maps. I'm going to use the first lemma to find something very similar to the second one. And here's the theorem and here's the definition. First, how this algorithm is going to work. I told you that I'm going to create a new instance, and I'm hoping that the potatoes are going to be smaller. So first, I take a template, which is going to be a finite set of idempotent algebras closed under taking subalgebras, I always assume that, plus idempotent images under any operation, any map. Okay? And then I take an algebra B, which is maximal in some sense, meaning for the template B, B minus this B algebra, template B minus the B algebra, is also a template, meaning that it cannot be, I mean, it's somehow a maximal size, for example. Okay. And I say that this B algebra can be eliminated, provided that for each template for which B is somehow maximal, I can find a solution CSPB in polytime, provided that somehow I have a black box algorithm for finding solutions for the CSP instance over the template B minus B. Okay, so I'm going to use this the sub-algorithm is black box, and using that, I will be able to find a polytime algorithm for solving CSP over B. And you can see this, that somehow, if you can say that each algebra can be eliminated, at the end, maybe you get trivial algebras, and you have you can solve CSP for trivial algebras trivially, and that will give you that CSP over some template is tractable. All right, so the elimination theorem is technical. I'm sorry about this. It's called the lemma in my write-up, and I mean it seems nice. I don't know what to do with it yet. So all right, so here's the theorem. I just renamed it elimination theorem. All right, so let's take an algebra B. Oh, what am I saying here? B should be independent of the template. So just take an algebra B and a binary term T, X, Y, such that the linear maps Y mapping to T, A, Y, where oh, it's all messed up. It's A is a fixed element of B, are idempotent and non-surjective. I'm really sorry about this. So the correct statement should be cross out this and write A here. So Y of T A Y is idempotent and non-surjective for all A. Okay, so for each A, I have this map. You can denote it some way. All right, and then I'm looking at the other direction. Let C be the set of elements B. It's written there, such that the other map, X mapping T X C, is a permutation. I just want to know that for which C, this map is a permutation, and I have to assume, unfortunately, that this C generates a proper subuniverse of B. If both of these happens, then B can be eliminated. All right, how does the proof goes? We have all the ingredients, it's easy. All right, so just take a template, B, such that this algebra in this template can be removed, so the remaining is also a template, so we have a maximal algebra in this template, and just taking an instance. And first, in this instance, there are two types of algebras, two types of potatoes. Those potatoes which are equal to my selected algebra B, and those that are not. Okay. And I care only of the first type because I'd like to eliminate that. So here's my potatoes. Suppose that these are the B's. Bi equals B, my selected one, and here Bj is not the selected one. Okay? All right, so I have this C. Oh, it's just some subset. And it generates a subuniverse if it's proper. So I just take SGC here, everywhere. And I can restrict the original problem to this subuniverse. And this is a smaller instance because B, in the new instance, there is no copy of B. So I can solve this instance in polytime algorithm. I can check whether there exists a solution which goes through all these subuniverse C and somewhere else otherwise. If I find such solution, then I'm happy. I found the solution of the original one, right? So I just assume that there is no such. What does it mean? It means that if there is a solution, it's going to be something like at some point, it's going to be outside of C. At some point, if there is a solution of my instance, then at some coordinate where the potato is equal to B, that the solution takes some value outside of C, because I checked that there is no, I mean, all the other ones would be always inside C. All right, so that's good. Now, I have this hypothetical solution T, which I know that it goes outside of C at some point. And using this T, I can formulate my absorbing set, I mean, I can formulate my constant set of maps is going to be Tx, oops, this is F, Tf F of I, okay? The usual one I had. Okay, I know that this is a set of consistent maps, and I know that it's not permutational, because at this coordinate, this guy is some constant, and that constant is not in C, that means that it's not a permutation at there. Okay? So, at that place, I'm outside of C, so this Pi at that coordinate is not going to be permutation. All right. Now, the problem is that using this, I have to know the solution F, and I don't know the solution F. I just assume that there is such. Instead of this, I'm going to find a different set of consistent maps such that Pi of X is not equal to that. Just I'm saying that it's an element of T, X, and B sub I. Since I don't know F sub I, I'm just saying that it is some element of this. But remember, so this is what I said. P sub I, X is element of T, X, B sub I. For all I and A. But I assume that these maps, Y to T, A, Y, are idempotent and non-surjective. So this is, for a fixed A, this map, T, A, Y, is an idempotent map. So this is just an idempotent image of B sub I. Okay, so I'm in an idempotent image. And I said it's non-surjective, so it's a smaller idempotent image than B sub I. So these guys are in the template because the template was closed on the idempotent images, and they are smaller than B. So I build this big instance, and here I just made copies of each of the B sub 1s, but instead of that, I can assume that P sub I A or P sub P1 A1 is inside T A1 B1, and this is smaller. So I can replace these potatoes, these big potatoes, by smaller ones, but I know that if there is a solution outside going, if there is a solution that has to go outside C, and then each of these has to be smaller. So I'm just writing that this constraint satisfaction problem with more potatoes, but each of the potatoes are going to be smaller. And that's why I need this condition. Now I just have to, unfortunately, if you choose P sub I A to be A, which is always here, P A A is A, then you get an identity solution. Identity, a set of consistent maps. Consistent maps are identities, and I don't like that, because that's not going to reduce my problem. So I have to make sure that somehow my solution is going to be smaller, it's not going to be permutational, so I just add an extra equality constraint. So if it's not going to be, I know that my set of consistent maps is not going to be permutational, so somewhere here, one of them is not going to be permutation, that means that the value of this and the value of some other are going to be equal. So I just choose for each coordinate here, there are only linear many in the number of potatoes, and choose each pair of elements, there are only constant many, and for each of such choice, I add an equality constraint here to my instance. And now I have a new instance, it's a smaller instance, the template is smaller, so I can run the black box algorithm. And there are two cases. Either I find a solution, in which case I have a non-permutational set of consistent maps, which reduces my original problem, or there are no solutions, that means that there were no solutions in the original problem. So that's the proof. It's not difficult once you know what's going on. All right, applications. Well, I don't have much time. All right, so I was doing this because I wanted to settle the problem that explains why I had maths on top and I think of maths on bottom, meaning that somehow, can you solve CSP in a template where each algebra has a congruence such that the quotient has bounded this and each block has maths? If you can do that, then you are a lucky man, I think. And I like to do this for the case where the quotient has a semilattice operation. And I couldn't do it except when the semilattice operations had more than one maximum element, and there it's trivial, because if the quotient has a semilattice operation that comes from a term operation from the bigger algebra, and I can iterate it, so I can get this condition I can get this condition easily. And since there are more than two maximum elements, none of these guys are permutations. And I can freely apply my elimination theorem, so these guys can be eliminated. The corollary, if you have a template language and each of these algebras B has a congruence, such that the factor is a semilattice, which is a rooted tree, and each beta block is massive, then CSPB can be solved in point time. Essentially, you apply this elimination until all of these template algebras are going to be linearly ordered, and then you have to use Peter Markovich and Ralph McKenzie's least block algorithm. The other applications, I wanted to show some idea that you can get the three-element CSP fairly quickly. So I think it's, I don't know, I hope one, two pages or something like that. I don't know. But I know that I think I have a proof in my head. I think that would be interesting. But I mean, that's not matter. So I mean, just you look at the VKNU, you take the multiplication of the VKNU and just you do cases, and many of the cases can be easily eliminated. So using this theorem, Peter Markovich has done a tremendous job on the four-element case. He not only did that, I mean, he first had to do the multi-sorted ternary. So if all of these algebras, I mean, you have a template and you have a bunch of arbitrary but finite three-element algebras, and then you can solve CSP on this multi-sorted ternary, three-element one, and then using that he can show that for a single four-element. And the next talk is going to be Bulatov's about conservative. I don't know the proof of that. Unfortunately, I was not able to do it. I think it's very close. If you look at this condition here, the C condition disappears essentially for the conservative case, because the subalgebra generated by C, since it's conservative, is going to be C. And if all of these are permutations and you look at the VKNU, then somehow you can, I mean, you are in a very special case. So that's not an important the problem here in the conservative case, as far as I couldn't get those through, couldn't get it push through that you have somehow a neutral element, so that T1 Y is 1 and TX1 is X, X1 is X, is top element, neutral element. And I put up a problem that can you avoid the condition that the subalgebra generated by C is not equal to B. I mean, I have to have the proper subuniverse, and I like to get that in general if possible. All right, thank you.